This is Calliope Writing Coach, the podcast about writing and publishing success from every angle. I'm Angie Fenimore, international best-selling author and writing coach.
And I'm Michael Sheen, author, platform designer, and marketing master. Episode 20, Blood Splatter 101. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Mike and Angie Show. I don't know what we're calling this.
Oh, Mike and Angie Show. No, it's Calliope Writing Coach.
It's the Angie and her super hot trophy husband show.
Yeah, that would be it.
There you go. There
you know
go.
What I like to say? Behind every great woman is a man carrying her bag.
Which I usually have.
Yeah, he does.
In addition to Angie and I, we've got Candace J. Thomas with us, author and person extraordinaire. Welcome, Candace.
Thank you very much.
Listen a little bit from about Candace. Candace J. Thomas studied at the University of Utah in creative writing and theater. As a writer, she looks at herself as a playwright, allowing her characters to speak for themselves. She isn't afraid to geek out at books and movies based on her favorites. Candace strives to live without regret and hopes to inspire others to find their passion. She has published 4 novels and several short stories. Welcome, Candace.
Thank you very much. Yay, that's nice.
That's kind of fun, huh?
Yeah, that's awesome.
Well, tell us a little bit more about yourself and how you became infected with this viral disease we call authorship.
Oh my gosh. I've always been infected, if that's the correct word. It's like a virus that takes over your life. I'm almost like, say it was an alien that attacked and just is like controlling me.
Yeah.
That makes a lot of sense, right?
How old were you?
Oh, well, I've always been writing. I would say that I wrote my first play. I wrote plays when I was young, like 10. I remember that was the first thing. And then I started doing shows, like a theater, and I started writing parodies of each show. And so I tried to find a comic voice, and I really enjoyed parodying. So then I've just been writing little short stories. I never believed that I would write a novel because honestly, there's a lot of words there. I thought maybe I would be like, a picture book author because it's just, just really concise. You only need like a few words, right, on each page. Mm-hmm. But then I just started, excited about a couple of different ideas and just tried to, experiment and see where it goes. And honestly, characters, I think I put this back on my theater background, but characters kind of drive me to write more about them because I want to know more about
them. You're the kind of writer where the characters actually come alive and drive the story.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah,
they
yeah.
take over and
yes,
they write it.
Completely.
For you.
I like just to know describe. Them as people. Yeah.
Right.
Okay. I do a lot of character development just so that I can know them more. And then I let them take the wheel for a little bit and see what they would do.
Mm. So do you develop your characters? Like, do you like sketch them completely out and some of that doesn't make it to the page?
Not really. I mean, I do sketch them enough to know them as if I knew them in high school, if it makes sense.
Yep.
So you don't need to know all the backstories. I don't want to know what their favorite, food is. But I do want to know enough about what they would do in a specific action, and how they would react would be different from another character. So that puts me in, when I'm driving the story, when I'm writing the story out and there's an action sequence, I know what this character is going to do. He's a chicken. He's going to, he's not going to be the lead in this battle.
Right.
He's going to be a little bit of a weasel and he's going to be in the background. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So I let them kind of explore their character, and that helps me understand more about where the story goes and what they would do in it. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. Totally. Mm-hmm.
Kind of makes me sound a little crazy.
But writers are.
They really
are. You have to be a little bit crazy.
Yeah, I was going to say, when you're the type of writer who you didn't stumble upon it later in life, you were like, you feel like you were born with this, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I'm the same way. It's like, I almost feel like a heroin baby. Do you know? It's like there was just like no
just
other way
a, this
was
a random go. Twitch that comes up.
But writers, we don't think like other people.
That's true.
We just
I like to call it like there's a language of art that we all kind of speak, and people that don't know art or don't to speak that language have completely no idea what we're talking about and why we geek out and get so excited right. about creating and creation yep. and imagination. And that's why I really like collaborating and getting with other authors, because I'm like, oh, we speak the same language. It's like, yep, we're all really Klingons here, you know, yeah. we totally get it.
Something Michael and I noticed at our courses, at our conferences, is there is a distinct line, like the continental divide between the nonfiction authors and the fiction right? authors. Yes. Different animal entirely. Very practical right? group. Very, you know, but the fiction authors, it's like, you know, you halfway expect them to bring their dragon with them yeah, to the course.
I feel that we kind of have the same goal in inspiring others and getting people to read and write. But
yeah.
but it's completely different where they'll be talking about their personal experiences. And I'm just like, and then we could totally add this dragon. And it would be like so epic, you know, or magic. And we would make this, you know, have this magician. I mean, that's kind of where my brain kind of... I don't know, goes. That's fun.
So let's talk a little bit about your work specifically for okay. a minute.
Sure.
You've written four novels total.
Four novels total, yeah.
Awesome. And you. Three of those are in a series. Tell us about the yeah. series first.
The series is called the Vivitira series. So it starts with Vivitira being the first Conjectrix, and then Everstar. The latest Everstar just came out in November. Of 2016. Mm-hmm. So that was really exciting. I'm all finishing a series, quite an adventure. Okay, I got inspired by an everyday conversation I was having with my mother. And my mother is a delight. She's really funny. And she was asking about tattoos. I don't have a tattoo. I'm afraid of needles. I'm fickle. I'm really, you know, I don't think that I could decide on one thing. Because I'm so random sometimes, but my mother, we were talking about tattoos, where I would have one and what I would do, and she said she'd have this cute little fairy on her butt or something like that. It was really awesome.
Well, that's exactly what I would say.
It was my mother, you know, my 60-year-old yeah. mother is like, oh yeah, I'd have this little fairy. It's so cute. But that was kind of on my mind, because a tattoo is a personal thing, and you get to kind of brand yourself, mm-hmm. And speaking of who you are. And then I thought about, well, what if you didn't have that choice? And it made me think of a girl who was branded, who had a tattoo that she hated. And she was instructed to always wear a scarf, but she didn't know that the scarf was magic and it hid magic. And all of a sudden, this character came to life, you know? And I went to bed, I went to sleep, and this kept on going in my brain. And my, you know, I love my dream brain, mm-hmm. because it just... goes places I would never imagine. Does, yeah. And my brain got so excited about this idea, and it created this person, and it created this story, and it woke me up at 4 a.m. I couldn't sleep, and I had to get my journal out and just start writing about, and it was really basic at first, you know. I just would write, you know, this girl has mark on neck, you know, she sees a girl with the same mark. She wants to know who this person is. She's immediately kidnapped at that moment, you know, that, and then all of a sudden I had more characters, and I had to ask more questions. Mm-hmm. I had to know who this person was, what her name was, who the person with the other mark was, who this guy mm-hmm. kidnapped, you know, mm-hmm. and he knows everything, right? That's where the story came about. That's where the first inklings of Vivitira started. Mm-hmm.
So where do you come up with the names? Because you're really creative with right. names.
I went to Latin roots. That's where I went.
Very good. Okay.
That's Vivitira just means a living stone or stone of life. And that wasn't actually in the very first... It was named something else, mm-hmm. and it kind of gave away the entire story by if I knew that, you know. Mm-hmm. But that was the working title, and Vivitira, in this story, it has six different stones, and each one represents a different element, including Fae and Light and Darkness. And then the Vivitira is just a stone that I came up with just offhand when I was writing and letting my character speak and do her thing, and came up with this stone that was the stone of all stones, that that took care of everything in this magic world, you know. But yeah, I had to kind of research, and I went to Latin roots because I like different languages, and just anything with a Latin base I felt was kind of recognizable.
Yes.
So mm-hmm. that's where Vivid Tarot came. Conjectrix is the same. Conjectrix is a dream conjurer. Who can control dreams?
It's a real thing.
Oh. I really like my second book. It's my favorite.
That's so great. That is so great. Now that series is published by
Skylar Publishing,
and it's spelled.
That's right.
Interesting.
It's spelled with an X. Yes.
X C H Y L E R.
But they.
That's not
they,
how I would have spelled it.
I know.
It's, but hey, you know, Google isn't how I would have spelled
Gaelic,
it.
It's Gaelic, I believe.
Okay, there you go.
But they specialize in steampunk and fantasy and mm-hmm. paranormal.
Right.
And they were the perfect brand for me to go with.
Excellent. Yeah. So you're happy with the way that the publishing process went? Is there anything that you could share with our audience about the publishing process, the good, the bad, the ugly?
Okay. So my publisher... It was fantastic to work with. They really invested in their author, mm-hmm. and their editing process was absolutely superb. From that point, though, they kind of release it out into the world. And honestly, I think that you have to take a lot of responsibility as an author to get your name out there. And that was one thing that I feel that they kind of don't have a much grasp on is the marketing side, because they're so global. They have authors in England, in Australia, and in the US. And so they just can't focus on the one individual author.
Mm-hmm.
I've taken on my brand and branding myself and pushing my name out there. And that's how I've gotten as far as I have.
Mm-hmm.
They've been extremely supportive with what I wanted to do. And so if I said, I want to do a book, Bob, I want to do, you know, and change the price of my book, they're like, okay, we support this, go for it. That's one thing that they've been really good to work with, but it's just a lot of work. I think that just as an author, you have to push yourself.
Well, you have publishing to has definitely there. Changed. And it used to be if you signed with the Big Five, they mm-hmm. were going to book you on that 10 city tour. Mm-hmm. There was going to be a limo waiting to pick you up at the airport.
And
right?
that's what everyone still believes.
And
too.
It's not. Yeah. And you were going to get the exactly 6-figure book way. Deal. They're not doing that anymore. Yeah. It's not the same. And, you know, if you're interested in the Big Five, you have to be growing your Twitter following, basically.
Yes.
You know, you really need to be looking at your social media presence.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're only partnering with people, unless, you know, you're like
Hillary
Clinton or somebody. Well, and
they're going to investigate you as well as an author.
Yep.
I mean, if you go and you sign with an agent and they're pushing your stuff, they're going to go, okay, well, what has she done?
Exactly.
How many followers does she have?
And what does she look like out there? Do we want to partner with this person, because it's a marriage.
Is she really
right?
crass? Is she really rude to her followers?
Exactly.
Does she like to cultivate a good community of support or readers?
Right.
That's really important. What you do and who you are on media and anything looks really important. It looks good. You have to look good.
Right.
Especially if you're trying to get those big top agents.
Which doesn't necessarily mean clean or this or that. It just means you create a, you know, a persona.
Yes.
Yeah, and you're consistent
with it. Yeah, and you're consistent with it.
Yeah. Right.
That's true.
Yeah, like Howard Stern, it would just like not work
right
for him to be nice.
I think it also depends on what genre you're trying to attack.
Yes, absolutely.
You know, if you're doing a middle grade, you've
got to be very mindful.
Yes, yeah. Exactly, because it's a lot of parents that are going to be looking
exactly.
at you.
Exactly, yeah.
So that kind of leads me to a follow-up question there is, how did you get through the door with Skylar Publishing?
Well, because I failed. To be honest, okay? So I tried, I didn't, all right, I'm going to give you a boring story. Okay?
We don't have to ask that question if it doesn't work. We can
keep going.
No, I'll tell you this story. It's a good story. So I wrote this huge fantasy novel, and I wrote it and rewrote it for years, okay? And it was... Yeah, probably 140,000 words. Okay, for a fantasy novel, that's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
But I wanted to target young adult audiences, so I started querying agents who did young adult.
Mm-hmm.
Like this is my big mistake, because when a young adult novel, you're looking at about 60,000 to 90,000 words, and for a new author, that's, they see a manuscript that's 140,000. They see it as, this person needs to edit. They don't know what she's doing. She has no clue. Mm-hmm. So I was targeting them and getting rejections, a ton of rejections, because I didn't go for the fantasy genre, which I should have.
Right.
So lesson learned, if you want to find that agent, you need to really know exactly what their...
Know the guidelines.
The
guidelines for the genre, the guidelines for the agency.
Yeah, so what I did is I was getting nowhere and I was feeling the rejection. And my dad is a self-published author. He writes boring stuff about... I don't even remember.
You haven't even made it through chapter three yet.
Well, it's I want to say self-help, but it's not. It's about managing better. You know, he does like managing educational.
Okay, books we've probably read.
Yeah, that's my kind of stuff. So
I can't think of the word right now. It's gonna come to me. I know it. But he did self-publishing, and he's like, you should just do that and just own it. And I was like, okay. So I decided to self-publish. And that was a big mistake on my part, because I knew that there was something wrong with the story. It went nowhere. And at that time, I would say that this is about 2010 mm-hmm. when that happened. The publishing industry was not where it is now.
Right.
I mean, self-publishing mm-hmm. was still really... just a really unknown market.
Yeah,
there really wasn't much. Yeah, it was just CreateSpace just barely came out and they're mm-hmm. just barely starting to do things. And my book went nowhere and I felt more of a failure than I ever did. And I knew that my book needed something, but I just shelved it until I felt the confidence of that I actually did something good. And what I did then is I took a lot of classes. I joined some community writing groups to try to boost up my confidence and see if I actually was really good. And that's how I found Skylar. Skylar was a new publisher, and they were looking for new works. And I tried a couple of other publishing houses, just going straight to the door, not going through an agent, thinking that maybe if they just read my stuff, that would be really great. But I got a couple of rejections from that. But Skylar was the first one that actually said, I'm really interested. I want to know where this goes. And I'm going to name drop here. Her name was Elizabeth Gilliland, and she found me. She just really enjoyed the story, but she saw the potential. And I think she also saw the problems. That's one of the things that I really liked about going through a publisher, is they can identify the problems. Mm-hmm. And when I decided to sign with them, I had no idea. I knew that they were going to I felt like new authors feel they're going to just rip my heart out. And hate, you know, and want to rewrite everything. And I won't lie that they did. They wanted to. But one of the things, this is another name drop. Her name's Penny Freeman, and she's the editor-in-chief of Skylar. And she said, I can see what you're doing here, but I have too many, like fantasy, there was too many perspectives. And I had done an omniscient view, and she's like, let's do a limited view, and I only want four people to tell the story. And they, and two of them, I had never put from their perspective of them. They, you know, I was like, oh, great. So I had to rewrite a bunch of my story order to make it.
You know, the thing is, though, is that they have their finger on the market. They know what's going to sell, and they are seeing stories. They know what works.
And yes.
They're as invested as we are.
Yes. And they really, I won't lie, it kind of, you know, hurt a little bit to rewrite that. And it has made it the best. They knew exactly what to do with it. And it's made it a fantastic story. I don't know if you know this, but Vivitira won Novel of the Year mm-hmm. In 2013 in the state of Utah. And that was, I have to say it's because of how we wrote that book and made it polish and shine and glimmer, and I'm so proud of it. I'm super proud of it.
It's That's beautiful. Awesome.
Yeah. So a couple of things that I want to point out from your story for our listeners is, number one, know your genre. And know the rules of your genre. When you're a published author and you've done everything and you know all of these things, then you can break the rules. Mm-hmm. But if you're trying to break through the door,
you probably shouldn't. Do you know? It's like Stephen King and J.K. Rowling.
They
are
can get
still,
away with things, but people can't get away with it from the, the beginning. Yeah. You have to like make those six figures a year.
So if you're writing YA, know the word count for YA. If you're writing fantasy, then know the word count for fantasy. And so that's what I got from that part of your story. Yeah. The second part that I think is really inspiring too is that as an author, you have to be willing to accept the coaching that comes to you.
And
even as painful it is, you know, you can imagine an Olympic athlete training, you know, I mean, that training is very difficult, but it makes them better at what they do. So no matter how good your natural writing ability is, there's somebody out there that can kind of take a 30,000 foot view of it and be able to make it just that much better. So that's what I get from that part of your story.
They really trained me to be an author. Conjecturix and Iverstar they trusted me more because we had gone through this big process together, and it trained me how to write the novels, for not only for my audience but for my publisher. They knew exactly what I was going to do, and it made it so much easier because we worked together and it was a team effort.
It's a collaboration.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, we tend to think that, oh, I'm going to write this book all alone in my writing chair. It's all me. And, you know, this is why I encourage new authors to actually go with a publishing house. Don't self-publish out the gate because you are going to then partner up with people that know more than you do.
I did not have the confidence to be an independent writer. I just didn't. And I didn't think that I had... I just didn't think I was talented enough. And I needed that validation that, yes, I'm doing something right. And a lot of people see that. You know, people, even now, they could, you could self-publish and you could put your name out there, but that's your name. You're branding your name. Yeah. And if you put out crap, they're going to know. Your audience is going to go nowhere.
Yeah.
So you got to be really careful with what you put out
there. It's like dead people don't know they're dead. Stupid people don't know they're stupid. You know? And bad writing, it's like bad. Bad. We all write crap at the beginning. We do. It's a learning curve.
It's okay.
And you don't know it's bad until you've learned some things. And then it's like you can never yank that back.
Yeah.
It's an ISBN. It's forevermore. There it is. It's like a tombstone.
I still see copies of my original work and go, oh, please, just burn it. No, it's going to mean something. No, it really isn't. It really isn't. Read the other book, please.
Read the other one first.
It's so much better. It is. And people have read both versions and they're like, yeah, it's a completely different book. It really is. I'm just really proud of it. Really
good,
bad.
Good. So then, talking about your fourth novel, I don't know if they actually came out in that sequence, but you've got the series that we've talked about, and then you've got a fourth novel.
I do have.
And you went a little
bit
different direction in publishing with that one. Talk a little bit about that. Tell us about the novel.
Okay, so I have a novel called Vampirish, a Hypochondriac's Tale, is what I called it, and it is about a hypochondriac who gets bit by a vampire and he has to learn to live in New York City. Now, the problem with this novel is I have a medical background where I worked in transfusion, and I understand a lot of blood banking that happens. And one of the things that's kind of funny to me is blood in vampire stories. Because there's a lot of like just basic medical knowledge that people that write vampire stories kind of miss out on. And I think it's kind of funny. So that's where this idea kind of percolated, if you can say, because I was inspired by, it's more the medical science of blood.
Okay.
People just don't understand it. If I talked to people about blood typing, you probably don't even know your own blood type.
A positive.
Very good. good.
Mm-hmm. Positive.
That's good. Good for you guys.
Okay,
it's the
but
only A+ I ever got in my life.
I'm okay.
I didn't know we were. So you're a universal donor.
I am the universal donor, and so I'll start talking blood. Like this could go in a completely different direction here, because we'll start talking blood. But anyway, people, there's a lot of medical science people just don't know, and I found it really funny this idea of this guy that. Has a problem with blood, like he visually can't stand it, the sight of blood, and he has to drink it. It's just a hilarious idea.
What about Rh negative? What if you're like,
I am Rh negative, and that's one of the things that that I try to attack in this book.
Okay, good.
But
see, I'm fascinated, right? Because I'm the girl that writes about murderers and stuff.
Oh yeah, there's
right.
So much about blood.
I find this very interesting.
Blood is so fantastic. I did a workshop. About blood at a conference just back in September, and it went really well because people just don't know anything about blood, how it splatters, how it works, why it's so fascinating. Mm-hmm. So let me go and tell you about this novel a little bit. So I got this idea, just I was inspired by because one of my friends got splashed in the mouth with a bag of platelets that had broken while I was working at the university hospital. And that's really gross, by the way.
Yeah.
And he said, oh, no, it really didn't taste that bad. It kind of tasted like condensed milk. And I was like, that is so nasty. But then I was kind of like, oh, if vampires only knew, they would be drinking platelets instead of blood. And and then that came this funny idea of this terrible, pathologist who was swirling some platelets in a goblet. You know, it's just, I thought it was just hilarious. But that's where this character Oliver came from, this lovable loser. It's just the worst vampire ever. The problem with it, it's a vampire novel, which you can't find agents for.
Exactly.
You can't get it out. And as much as I know people would love to read this, because it sells, you know.
Right.
But it's something that the publishing industry does not.
They're
There's a
tired
taboo.
Of it.
Yeah.
Right. They're
done.
Tired of it. Which
like,
doesn't
this is
mean
not the
readers
next
are.
Thing.
Exactly. The readers aren't sick of it yet.
Yeah. Even when I say, oh, it's a hypochondriac who gets spit by a vampire, people are like, oh, that sounds awesome. I would totally read that. Mm-hmm. But publishers won't. They won't touch
it. Exactly.
So I decided to, well, it's a great story. It's fun. Let's just self-publish it and just get it out there. So I had it edited really well. I had a cover designer. I'm going to hurt Ampersand's book covers. Fantastic job on my cover. And I've had it out there for like 6 months and it's doing awesome. I'm
I
loving it.
I haven't read it yet. I need to get a copy.
Please. It's just a hoot. I mean, it'll take you like 20 minutes to read. Well, not really, but a good day, good chunk of your day. And it's just a delightful read.
Good.
But well, I decided I did want control of that one. I had the confidence, I believe, that in the in
and
my writing,
some know-how too.
Yeah,
you know, it's like,
and
you,
I knew what. Yeah,
you have to know. You have to also be established. I think.
Yeah.
You know, you already have to have established yourself as an author, have an audience. But that's my recommendation. I mean, I know that there are the few out there that become successful self-publishing out the gate.
Yes.
But it's, you know, it's the same as saying, oh, J.K. Rowling or Stephen King. It's like, yeah, there are the few that are the super leads that will, you know.
Yeah. Once you know the industry, you can do things.
Yeah, exactly.
But until you know, you don't know how to do that. I think a lot of people come to me because they don't know how to get into the industry, right? And I kind of clawed and tried every avenue in order to get somewhere with marketing and putting myself out there. And I feel that there's a little bit about the publishing industry that it's kind of like a blanket party. You know, it's like a blanket fort.
Oh, no
kidding.
Yeah.
Not where you put a blanket over somebody and then beat them with a bat.
No. Yeah, sorry. It's a blanket fort because it's something that's really cool and everyone's really excited about it, but nobody really knows how to get in there. And if you get in there it falls down on top of you, you know, you can, you know, that's one of the things. Or I also think that publishing is kind of like a door. So there's a door and you see the door and you want to go through the door and it's the prettiest door in the whole world, but nobody knows how to get in the door, you know, and they'll try to look through the windows and they'll try to claw through this side and that. And then once you get in the door and you want to know you're so excited to know what's behind that door. And you get in there and you find out this is just a bunch of authors trying to find another door, you know, and it's true because, and that's kind of how I feel. What I really like about being the author that I am and the person that I am is talking with other authors and helping other authors so that we can all find that door
together. That's something that I love about the writing community and the publishing world. It's like, it's this huge, like getting published, this huge monolith of a thing that nobody can figure out. Right. But once a few get in, it's like, come on in.
I have no problem with sharing some things to help other people. I can't really say that that's what's going to happen. I don't know if this is going to happen for you, but this is what I did, and I don't mind sharing that.
Right.
And I don't mind, other authors might mind this, but I don't mind sharing other authors' success. Mm-hmm. If they are successful, I'm so grateful, I'm glad, right. And I'm going to push them forward and let them be successful.
Well, by and large, I mean, we work with lots and lots of authors and publishing houses and literary agents, and that's our experience. Mm-hmm. You know, it's pretty much across the board. We have a hard time coming across authors, even when they've made the big time, that are not supportive and not willing to. Just
right? Like, I find it so strange. It's just a different outlook for me. I'm all about collaboration and helping other people succeed.
Yeah.
Where other authors feel a jealousy because my author friend Rebecca Atherington, she's done really great things. She's self-published, but she has, she's got a really great presence, I should say, on Amazon. And she, when I first met her, that was the first thing I said to her. I was like, well, tell me how to sell your books. And she's like, was blown away that I asked that question because I want her to succeed. Her audience may not be my audience. And it's all about the reader to me, making the people, the reader happy. Mm-hmm. And she was just blown away. She thought that was the coolest thing.
Mm. Well, there's something about we love books, we love words, and we see this huge value in an actual book. And so, you know, we're kind of pulling for the whole team, you know?
Yeah. Well, and, you know, unlike a used car salesman, you know, you might sell one car to one person, but book lovers buy hundreds of books. I know we do, you know, I mean, one of my favorite sayings is, fill your Amazon shopping cart like no one's watching. that's the way it goes around here. So, you know, absolutely. There is that collaboration that exists between authors that I just love.
I find it as a family, honestly. There's lots of authors that I've found and that I've helped. One of the things that I've done recently is because I've met so many different authors, is I've just kind of collaborate with people to try to help their stories. I got into the editing side of publishing just recently within the last 3 months.
Oh, I didn't know that.
I know, right? It's so exciting. So there's a story. I'm name dropping a lot of things here. There's an author. His name is Ben Ireland, and he is part of the Skyler Group. He's part of that publishing house. And I met him at one of the cons that I was at, and he started telling me about this story, and I really liked it. I really believed in it. But I knew that like the publishing world probably wouldn't like it. And he's an established writer. He has a couple of books out. But I thought, well, if I helped him, you know, build this world a little bit, maybe he could self-publish and make it really,
that's great,
really awesome. And so that is I've been helping him edit his book, Billy Blacksmith. Yes, but that comes out in 2017, just right around the corner. I've helped to edit that, and I'm really proud of it. It's a really great universe. It's one of those things where somebody, and this happens a lot, where authors start just telling their stories, you know, I've got this idea and I want to share it with you. And that that happens all the time. I'll be at a booth and people are like, oh yeah, I've got this idea. Let me share it. And I'm always willing to listen and give feedback. This was one story that I really felt strong about and that I really wanted to be involved in, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. And because the imagination is so incredible to me. I love authors that can blow my mind. If they trick me, mm-hmm. or the imagination is so great, mm-hmm. I will love them forever.
Mad respect.
Right? Right? That's how I feel about Neil Gaiman. He blows my mind, you know? So when I get stories or authors that just make me love them and envious of their brain, I want to be a part of that. And that's how I feel like this project was. So it's kind of fun to see the back end of publishing as well, than being at the front, you know? It's kind of fun. It's good to see those kind of successes.
So that's a great segue to my next question is, you know, have there been any books or any courses or anything that have really helped develop your career as a writer, or any advice that you could pass on to our listeners in helping them develop their career?
I think a writing community is absolutely, it's one of the most important things that helped me. There, I know anywhere there's going to be people, there's going to be writing groups, you know, that meet at libraries or that collaborate and get together. I'm sure that there, if you just Google it, you can find anything that's close mm-hmm. to you. And it's all about writing and perfecting your craft. Not only that, but it's a good networking tool. Just meeting other people and learning how they've done it has helped me understand more about the publishing world. I think that, people think that that's really cool that I've written books, but it's only because I've finished it. I finished writing it. There's so many creative ideas out there that people just don't write. They're like, I got this idea for a book, and they'll tell me, and I'm like, that's fantastic. Please write it. No. Can we write it together? No. You need to write it yourself.
Or they finish the first three chapters and perfect the three chapters and never really, you know, get past
there that. Are thousands of ideas that never get written. It's just because they just didn't do it. Mm-hmm. You know, the only reason why I feel like I'm a success where I'm at is because I finished the book. I just read it, you know? I just wrote the whole thing. And that's why.
that's actually pretty good advice. You know?
Write the book. And what people do is they'll write, they'll write a chapter, write three chapters, and then they'll reread it and rewrite it and rewrite it forever. Mm-hmm. And then they'll want to change it and do everything. And I'm like, please just get the story out, because you have to know that it's only a first draft.
Well, and something else too, it's like, and then you don't have balance in that story because you grow when you write.
Yeah.
And so if you write that whole first draft, write crap, write great stuff and write crap, then you revise the whole thing, the whole story, the whole book is going to grow at the same rate rather than having this really manicured part of the yard and then the what the hell happened over here, you know, part of the book.
Well, and I think the story evolves.
Yeah.
And for me, I'm a discovery writer. The story evolves and you don't know the ending, and the ending will change the beginning. Now that you know the entire story, once it's all out there, then you know exactly where to fix.
So you want to tell our listeners what a discovery writer is, because there are people out there scratching their heads right now going, oh, I've got to know what
all this right,
is. I think that might be me.
I cannot follow an outline. There are some people that are meticulous on outlines and they have this great idea and they'll bullet point everything and they'll write, this is one chapter and this is it and that's it. I can't do that. I have to let my imagination take over. Absolutely. So I have an idea, you know, point A, point B. That's, I know exactly what I want to achieve in this story, but I don't know how it's going to get there from point A to point B. I like to give my characters a direction, I give them a puzzle, and then I let them figure out how to do it. That sounds insane, like they're real people, but I feel that's, I'm writing it, but I'm letting them discover how to tell me how to write it. Mm-hmm. That makes sense. Mm-hmm. That's what I love about discovery writing. I'll tell you a story. So in my second novel, Conjectrix, there is a moment where one of these sisters she's in this town. She knows she's being followed, and she knows that the way home is left. And I know that the way home is left, and I know that that's where I need to write so she can get back. And I wrote that at end of the chapter, and she turned right. Boom. All right. So,
spoiler alert.
I was like, well, I don't know. I have no idea what is on the right here. And as I started the next chapter, it was awesome because she had to figure out, just as I had to figure out, how to get out of this situation, you know, and it was so much fun. I love that part because of that, you know, and I love where it took the story in a completely different direction. So now that we had this cityscape that I had to kind of develop more about what was happening in the city at this time. And it was great. Oh my gosh. Sorry. That was a real big.
I wish we were on video because you guys should see Candace's face right now. She's like lighting up the whole room right now. It is just adorable.
But I love it. I mean, that to me is the very best, most fun I've ever had in my life is discovering where the story goes. I have more passion for it. It's just, I'm totally lit up. I know it because it's so great. It's so much fun.
Yeah. Anyway. If you claim to be a writer and you're not that lit up, you're doing it wrong. I got to just tell you right now.
Oh my gosh.
That's fun. That's really fun.
I really like my second book. The first book, I had to establish the characters and the story. Second book, I got to play. I got to play and let them do whatever they wanted. Third book was really hard for me to write because first I'm saying goodbye, but second, I had to kind of follow an outline because I had to collect all of the threads I threw out there in the second book, you know? Mm-hmm. So that was a little bit hard for me, but I'm really proud of my whole series.
I would love to know what you do for, do you have any kind of setup or rituals or... what do you do when it's time to write? Are you somebody who can okay, I got 10 minutes and I'm on the train? Or, you know, like me, I have to create it with the freaking neighborhood. Uh-huh. Angie is writing and do not disturb and she will not be taking a shower for 3 days. You know?
When inspiration happens, things do kind of get... I don't like to do laundry when I'm writing, things like that. You'll know that when I'm writing, when my laundry piles up. But that's kind of why I feel I need a personal assistant just to come do my laundry. I do have a couple of rituals. I like to write in specific places in my house. There's a window with my chair and certain parts of the day. I like to write at night as well. I just on my bed with my laptop with my hot cocoa or tea next to my bed, and I like to listen to music and I like to write way into the night. Like it's 1 or 2 and my brain is a little bit fuzzy, but that's when the real cool creativity mm-hmm. comes out. Mm-hmm. And when I am in a moment, I have to complete that moment. I don't like to leave things because if I come back to it, it's going to be different.
Right. I could never get that. I think it was Hemingway that said that he would leave. He would stop writing the night before getting that last idea done.
Before finalizing that sentence.
Yeah, that last
idea. Half a sentence.
I could never. It would not be the same.
It would not. It's not the same. It's not the same for me. Just because it's the same thing when I read a book, I have to kind of stop in the middle of a chapter because once I get to the end of the chapter, I'll want to know what's next. Mm. So I'm writing for the reader because it's going to be I want to know what comes next as well. You know, mm-hmm. I want to keep them that intensity. And I feel if I don't complete that, I won't want to know what's next
right.
in the next
right.
chapter.
Kind of like binge watching.
So. yeah.
I'm going to have to go around the horn pretty soon here because I'm staying up all night. Okay, just one more episode.
Just one more.
Okay, just one
that
more.
Is so, that is my, 5 a.m. That's how I read books. It's terrible. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then people you know, see me in the morning and they're like, you look like death. I'm like, I know, but this book is
I'll sleep when I'm old.
I don't even care. Yeah, I don't. I will stay up and read a book. Or sometimes the book bothers me so much that I'll have to wake up early mm-hmm. and finish it. Mm-hmm. And that kind of thing happens all the time. I'm an author, but I'm a big fan of reading. I love reading.
Yeah, that's cool. My number four rule for writers is you've got to read, and you've got to read your genre too, you know.
Well, I was always afraid that somebody, that I was repeating somebody's idea, you know. So I want to know what's fresh and happening so that I don't go, oh yeah, that's exactly what this person
yeah,
just wrote.
Yeah, there you go. Mm-hmm.
But, so that brings me to another question. Has your writing career opened any doors that you were totally surprised by, either by meeting people or becoming involved in different aspects of the writing world or other world that yes. you wouldn't have gotten before?
Like being here? I think so. It's helped me meet a lot of people. I think it taught me how to be a person, to be honest, to find who I actually was. Because I went through, I'm a theater person. So being a theater person, you hide a lot of who you are because you can pretend to be somebody else. Mm-hmm. So there was a lot of self-confidence that I didn't ever have. And I didn't become a writer until later on in life, well into my 30s, because I was unsure of who I really was. I didn't have a real self-confidence. And it's made me grow up a little bit and become a different part of myself that I didn't know existed. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does completely. So, and it was so not what I expected. And it does. It actually, because, you know, I'm listening to you say that and I'm like, that resonates. Like I had this, yeah. I have the same experience.
Yeah. I mean, just because you're kind of put into people's living rooms, you know, you're giving a very personal part of yourself mm-hmm. yes. you've written, and you're letting people read this diary that you know it really is a horcrux, a slice of my soul that mm-hmm. I've put into this book, and I know that people are just they're reading part of me. And that's kind of hard to come to grips with sometimes, mm-hmm. especially if you don't have that self-confidence. So building that, just knowing other people were going to read that, had to build a layer of skin on me. Mm. And then I had to, to be that author, I had to, you know, just kind of grow up. That's the best way. And dive into a part of my person that I never knew existed, mm-hmm. that I never knew I could be. This confident woman that I never was before. Mm. I am that I am now. I can stand in front of people and talk about writing, no problem at all. But I never was that person before. Mm. It's taken years to come there, wow. to come this far. So.
Yeah, it's difficult to imagine you the shy wallflower.
I totally was. So
I'm still not there.
Well, and there's still insecurities that I have. I still worry about, you know, what I look on camera, how people see me. I really worry about what my online persona is, what my media is like. I try to cultivate that really well because I try to be this funny, outgoing person, and you'll see that all over mm-hmm. on my media.
Right.
But I'm really careful with what I put out there.
I am too to a degree, but part of my brand is I say things that are somewhat, you know, you know, not normal for sure, not the acceptable, like, you know what I mean? It's like not the things that other people would say. And I, yeah, I got myself in a little hot water recently. Yeah, which we, because I got very opinionated
and
about
her
something.
Husband slash social media advisor,
he just was looking at me like, knock it off, knock it off, knock it off. So much so that I had to actually unfriend some people, which I have a policy. I don't do that.
Oh,
I don't ever block or unfriend. But it was like, it was beyond bullying. Like, I was concerned that they might find out where my house is. Right. You know?
Well, my I just understand where my audience is.
Yeah.
I do young adult, and a lot of those people are on, you know, on social media, and I try to cater to their likes and be funny and charming, so that they'll go, I really like this author.
What kind of fan mail do you get? Do you just get?
I get a lot of I get a lot of teenagers who are writers who want to be, you know, that I have inspired, to be writers, and they want to know how do I do this? How do I do this? How can I change my story? How, I get a lot of that. Mm-hmm. So I do also, you know, I do get some creepy, emails because, you know, I've got long blonde hair and people, I don't know, that gets a little bit weird. So I have to keep my personal life, away from, you know, my public life.
Yeah.
But that's what I get. It's funny. I went to this in Portland. I was in Portland at the Portland Book Festival this summer, and there was a guy who, he was just at the donut shop there. That we were just buying donuts. We heard that Blue Star Donuts was like the place to get there, because you hear voodoo and they're like, oh no, go to Blue Star. So we went to Blue Star, and this guy, he just, you know, struck up a conversation. He was like this cute little 18-year-old boy. Oh, he might listen to this. I'm sorry, Nate, if you're listening. Anyway, he saw that we were writers, and he's a writer. He wanted some inspiration, and we just befriended him, and he helped us set up our tent and get everything done. He stayed and talked with us, and we became friends, and he read my book. We gave him copies of our books because he was just, you know, so charming and so nice. But I gave him a book of my Viviterra, and he read it, and he wrote the most sincere review of it and how it changed his life and how it's inspired him to become a writer. And that, to me, is the biggest compliment. Yeah. That is why I'm doing this. Mm-hmm. That's why is to inspire others
exactly.
to do it. And I will never forget that experience. That was one of the best things ever. I like to befriend people and help inspire them to be writers.
I had somebody who reached out to me once who was suicidal, who I talked down from the ledge, and we stayed in communication. He had a lovely family. You know, he had just been jobless for a long time, really struggling. And years later, I ended up staying with him and his family in New York when I went to a writer's conference out there. And yeah, and his, you know, his little girl had, like, you know, we're talking 8 years later, and his grandmother was making breakfast for me the next morning. And it was just, like, so cool. Mm-hmm. Just, like, such a great experience that here I am years later looking at this family that would have lost their father, you know, right? The son, the husband had, you know, had I not been accessible. And that's my favorite thing about writing, is just the difference.
Yeah. And being an author, it's very global, you know, but I don't think of it, you know, I just think of it, well, I'm just kind of, you know, a regular author around the community and whatever, but it's very global, and I'll get people from Canada or Australia, and they'll message me and want to, and be friends with me and want inspiration. And I think that's fantastic. You know, I like how global you can be with social media.
And then it doesn't even matter the genre. It's like,
right.
You know, fiction authors can impact people the same as somebody who writes their nonfiction story that's, you know, inspiring and all meant, you know, to inspire people to overcome impossible odds. But it's writers. It's every writer.
Yeah. Well, I think if you're the author or the writer going with the idea of inspiring people, your novel changes. Yes. The voice of it, the spirit of it. There's something special about this if that's your intent, if that's really what you want to do.
Yeah.
And it shines within the writing, I think. I would hope that it does.
Actually. It does. No, so, it does. It does. Those words on the page are there for it. Absolutely, it does.
Yeah.
So, Candace, what's next for you?
Well,
you've had a busy year this
year. I did have a very busy year.
But what's next?
I'm kind of taking some time off. This is my marketing season.
Okay.
But I do have, I'm not saying that I'm not writing. I totally am. Mm. I've got a couple of different ideas. There's a short story that I wrote called Hawkweed, and it's kind of it's a dystopian Frankenstein.
Oh, very cool.
I would like to say that. But that one, it has been bothering me for a while, and I want to expand that into a series. I think it would make a fantastic series, but I don't think I'm ready to tackle another series yet. Series are they're kind of hard to wrap up. And I've got a couple of little things. I do intend on finishing with the Billy Blacksmith series and editing that and seeing where that goes. So that we'll be doing something this year as well with that. And yeah, and I don't know. I like to think that there's magic out there for me, and I can't wait to meet it.
Awesome.
And play
excellent,
with it.
Excellent.
Well, give us your website.
Yeah, give us how do we contact you. Yes. What's your favorite social outlets?
The best way, I mean, my website is CandaceJThomas.com. It's pretty easy. Mm-hmm. And I like to blog and do book reviews. It's just kind of silly place, but you can find all my books there. Also, I tweet a lot. Instagram a lot, Facebook a lot. You can find me everywhere.
Perfect. Well, Candace, thank you so much for being here in the studio. It has been an absolute pleasure to have you.
You're welcome.
You're always such a bright light in our day when you show up. So yeah,
thank you very much. Thanks for having me, guys.
CandaceJThomas.com. That's where we can find you, and we'll be looking forward to what comes next.
Thank you.
Awesome. Thanks so much for listening. Be sure to subscribe so that you get each new episode as it comes out. You can find all of our episodes and show notes at calliopepodcast.com. Don't forget to shoot some stars our way if you like the show.